Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Sparty Talk, everyone. There is no music, and the reason there's no music is the Michigan State football team doesn't deserve it. I am Satchmo, joined by the one, the only, the Thin Man DB. Greetings, DB. DB, are you there? Oh, boy. This podcast is off to a slow start. Kind of like Michigan State's offense all year long. DB, are you there?
Hello, hello. Greetings?
Yes, DB's there. Yes.
Ah, yes. Greetings and salutations.
Yeah, greetings and salutations. How are we today?
Well, we're good. We're actually, while we're talking to you, bringing you live tonight during Monday Night Football. The Lions leading the Raiders by 3 in the second half.
Well, yes, and they're leading by 3 because Jared Goff just threw a pick six. No bueno. look, I mean, first of all, let me be clear. I would like the Lions to win this game. I'm not a Lions fan, but, you know, I'm Lions adjacent. DB is a Lions fan. And so, you know, I would like to see the Lions win. But if the Raiders are actually going to score points, A, I don't want their defense to do it because I'm going up against them in fantasy football for whatever reason. Someone picked up the Raiders defense. And B, I really need Devontae Adams to score and not the Raiders defense. Once again, wrong people scoring. And then I need Jahmyr Gibbs to have a big game. And I'm not sure what combination of things that I need to actually win both of those games, but there you go. That's what I need. So just help me out. That's all I can say.
That moment of silence brought to you by the bad play of the Detroit Lions just now. Anyway.
Yeah, yes. And the Lions have this unique ability to just stink it up when they're under the national spotlight.
Oh, yeah.
Not as unique as the ability of Michigan State to stink it up on the football field this year, though.
No.
So here's what we're going to do. The therapist couch is open. DB and I are going to do a little group therapy session. you want to call in? Yeah, go for it. I suppose the guest call-in number is 323-870-3997. That's 323-870-3997. But that's only if you're listening to us live. If you're listening to a recording of this show, don't call in because we're not going to pick up the phone.
Yeah, we're not plugged into it all the time. Sorry, America.
Yeah, we do not have a 24/7 helpline for Michigan State fans, although honestly, this year they kind of need it.
You're not kidding.
It's bad. But we are going to talk about other stuff. You know, we're going to talk about Michigan State basketball, which, you know, is kind of a feel-good story, has the potential to be a feel-good story. We're going to talk about Michigan State hockey, which isn't a feel-good story yet, but it has the potential to get there. We might need to pump the brakes a little bit on the Michigan State hockey feel-good story, but we'll see. So we'll talk about those two. You know, maybe we might get squeeze in a little Michigan State soccer, a little Michigan State volleyball talk. And so that's all within the realm of possibility. And, we'll talk about Michigan stealing signs. That'll be fun. If you want fireworks, stick around for that, including the dopey NFL response to this. And we'll get into that. And then we'll get into Halloween talk. And so... That's your show for today. And so we're going to Michigan State football. We're going to look at this season, and it's probably going to be the last time we look at the play on the field this season. What's happening outside the field of play at this point is way more interesting than what's happening on the field. And frankly, there isn't a whole lot to talk about for play on the field. So, you know, this is going to be your last sort of Michigan State football-centric podcast until they hire a new head coach. And we'll talk a little bit about that as well. And the one candidate I think DB and I can both agree that we don't want. hint. Its initials are UB. Yes. Its initials are UB.
It also likes sad pizza.
Yeah, Papa John's, like cold Papa John's. I mean, if you're going to have cold Papa John's, you might as well go work in Kentucky. just say it. So we'll get to that. But DB, you and I watched the game in person on Saturday, which was a great deal of fun, by the way. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we watched a game in person together. I mean, we've watched them on the phone together. We've watched the same game and texted each other at the same time. But it's been a while since you and I have been on a couch watching a game partaking in drink and food and just sort of making fun of the TV. We're going to it's just been a while. And what we watched was a 27-12 loss. And honestly, it wasn't even that close. This could have been a 35-12 loss or a 42-12 loss. That's unfair. It wasn't that close because the offense was not good. The defense played relatively well until they wore out.
Right.
Yeah, and so, you know, they wore out in the fourth quarter, gave up a couple late touchdowns, and that was all she wrote. But the offense was putrid. That's a good word for it. It was ineffective in large part because. And in large part because there aren't enough playmakers anywhere on the field, DB. If you took a look at the wide receivers, there was no separation. If you took at the offensive line, they weren't winning their battles. If you take a look at the running back, you know, there was a little juice to the run game. And, you know, the quarterback play, which is kind of hard if your offensive line isn't winning and your receivers aren't getting separation and the running game is inconsistent. But the quarterback play under Caden Hauser wasn't good. Sam Levitt showed some more juice. We thought about, you know, if Michigan State came back to win, the headline might be Love It or Levitt. That didn't happen. And, you know, I guess you could say that they waited too long to put Levitt in the game. On the other hand, when they put Levitt in the game, instant turnovers. I know everyone wants to kill the offensive coordinator, and offensive coordinator shares a lot of blame in this because, well, you know, the play calling wasn't terribly imaginative, but they were trying to protect a quarterback, a young quarterback, and, you know, with not a lot of experience, and a quarterback after that with even less experience. And so I don't think the play calling was good. You might call it bad, but it wasn't. I mean, it's unimaginative. It was bland. I think it's a reflection of the sort of the talent on the field, the execution. I mean, I have a problem with our offensive scheme overall, DB, because it feels like it just doesn't feel modern. It doesn't feel like it's caught up to the times. And so I think that is problematic. I feel it's offensive scheme that's, you know, would have worked 10 years ago and it doesn't work now. And so I think that's a problem, but it's not just one thing. It's a lot of things, DB.
So absolutely. I mean, the offense has, you know, it's just a microcosm of the whole season. It doesn't matter who the quarterback is. It doesn't matter, you know, the offensive line doesn't get the push. They don't win the battles. It doesn't matter who they're playing other than Central Michigan and Richmond. the two games that they won. The defense gets worn out. The defense, you know, got smacked around a little bit in a couple of games, and they'll get smacked around in a couple more this year. But, you know, you can't pin it all on the defense when they're on the field 90% of the time. And they have injuries, and they have, you know, other things going on, and there aren't enough playmakers on that side of the ball either. The only life, as you mentioned, that we saw in the game a little bit near the end was Sam Levitt coming into the game, and his arm certainly is lively, not always accurate, but lively. It did provide a little spark at the end of the game, and you wonder, I guess, Datchmo, is Levitt now going to be starting these last four games?
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder about that. I mean, look, I was joking before Levitt came into the game. The way you could tell the difference between Levitt and Hauser is Hauser underthrows everything and Levitt overthrows everything. but that is in part due to the fact that Levitt's got a live arm. And you can tell the difference. There's some zip on those throws. And those throws, I mean, just the arm talent is there. It strikes me as, you know, yeah, we probably should see it, because if you're going to ask me which one has the more talented arm, I would say Levitt. If you were to ask me which one probably has a better grasp of the offense, I would probably say Hauser. But Hauser's only got, a couple of starts underneath him and, you know, a little longer in the system. So if you ask me which one probably has more upside, it's Levitt. And I think you are at the point in the Michigan State season where you are playing for upside. Somehow the Lions managed to screw up a first and goal, DB. I feel like we're talking about the Michigan State offense.
The Lions have woes in the red zone lately.
Wow. I mean, two consecutive turnovers. Yeah. Man. And, you know, they got spanked the same weekend. The Lions got spanked the same weekend. The Spartans got spanked. There's odd parallels right now. The Detroit Lions need to stop watching Michigan State football.
And maybe Michigan State needs to stop watching the Lions. I have no idea. But, I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
Number 98 on the Raiders. I'll digress for a second. Number 98 on the Raiders, Max Crosby, Eastern Michigan graduate, who gave the football program a whole bunch of money today, good for him. He's been in the Lions' back for your game.
Yeah, well, he knows a little bit about how to get into the Detroit backfield from his Eastern Michigan days.
yes, he does.
Yeah, yes, he does. There's just so much wrong with. But the other weird thing, I just want to get back to Michigan State for a second, is you also have to factor attrition into this, right? Which is Michigan State doesn't have a whole lot of high end talent to begin with. And then you get injuries and, you know, transfer portal and people go in and out. The drop-off in talent becomes big. I mean, there's nothing there. There's no juice.
Right. Yeah, there's nothing. And, you know, you were talking about the offensive scheme and, you know, the fact of the matter is, and this has been – kind of what we've been saying now for a good month and a half since, you know, Mel Tucker has been gone. You know, this is going to, coaching-wise, is going to have a new look next year. And maybe even player-wise, too. Yeah.
All right. So while we're on the subject of coaching and stuff, Michigan State fans, just stop it. Don't go onto social media and say these coaches need to be fired right away. That's like the dumbest reaction of all time. I know you're mad and upset and frustrated, but – really? You want to you want to fire all the coaches tonight and replace them with who?
At this point, it's such a moot point. I mean,
yes,
the coaches that we're seeing right now are just caretakers to get through the rest of the season. That's really
yes.
how this has been since the Washington game. Yep.
Yeah, they are dead men walking. So why are you going on social media demanding that they all be they're getting fired at the end of the season? What, you want them fired now? And so it's just stunning. I just don't get it. I mean, they're like, Harlan Barnett, fire him now and replace him with who? What, you want to put Courtney Hawkins in? There's nothing Courtney Hawkins is going to do that's going to change all of this.
Yeah, nothing's gonna happen. Mark D'Antonio can't work a 2013 miracle here. There is no, the season is over, folks. I mean, it's the one reason it's not over, as you have said, Satchmo, is to take a look at what we got and are we playing hard and are we looking better and growing even defeat? And at the moment, I would say no. And we're not. No.
I would agree. I mean, and I'll take it a step further. I honestly don't care if we win a game the rest of the way. I don't care.
Yeah.
What I think is important is, are we showing any growth? And never mind as a team, on an individual basis, are players looking better than they did last week? Are players improving? Maybe not from a team standpoint, in a mesh standpoint, from a skill standpoint. Are they making the same mistakes they made? Are they making better reads? Are they doing any of this sort of stuff? I mean, this is the sort of stuff that intrigues me. And this is the stuff that I'm looking to see moving forward, right? What is it? And, you know, there's this belief among Michigan State fans that, like, you know, with better coaching, we'd have two or three more wins. And I am of the belief that, you know, you could throw Nick Saban on this team and have him coach him up for a year, and we might get one more win. Is that worth it? It would be worth it for a skill level and development standpoint, but at this point, we're not playing for wins and losses. We're playing to grow these players and get them ready for next year.
Right, exactly. Yep, and you know, come right after the Penn State game, end of the season, you know, and we don't know exactly what's going on, but my sense is that some coaches on their bye weeks or whatever, whoever they're interested in, have been interviewed, and for better or worse, whoever these people are. And I would suspect shortly after the season, an announcement will be made, and we'll be able to start the recruiting process and sort of see who that is. And hopefully it's a good choice. And it doesn't have to be sexy.
No, it doesn't have to be sexy. Look, it's when you're hiring a coach, right, you've got to make certain determinations, all right? One of the determinations you need to make is, what does the school stand for? What does the Michigan State football program stand for, right? So that's the first decision. What are the values of the Michigan State football program? So you've got to decide what that. You have to know what your values are. You have to know what your goals are, right? The goals should be to win a national championship. I would presume that is the goal. And maybe the goal is to win a Big Ten championship, because, you know, if you win a Big Ten championship, you're going to play for a national championship, right? So that is that is the second goal. The third, so you have to know, you've got to know your values. You have to know your goals. All right. Once you know your values and know your goals, and note that I did not put beating University of Michigan in the goals. Right. That's not the goal. The goal is to win a Big Ten championship or a national championship.
Right.
Beating the University of Michigan would be a byproduct of winning a Big Ten championship or national championship.
Right.
All right. So you have to know what your goals are. You have to know what your values are. If you know what your goals and values are, then you can begin the process of saying, all right, which coaches fill these goals and values? And you'll notice I left the values part sort of blank, right? Because, you know, what you value in a program can vary, and that's up to the university officials and administrators to decide what they value in a program. One of the things you would hope they value is integrity, right? One of the things you would hope they value is good behavior. One of the things you would hope they value is a track record of integrity and good behavior and a track record of doing the right thing when bad things happen to the program. Because you want to know what Michigan State doesn't have a track record of right now? Doing the right thing when bad things happen to the school or the program.
Right.
You can't have that. So just based on what you would expect at a bare minimum the values of Michigan State to be, those values are automatic disqualifiers for Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
Right? He might, yeah. I mean, on a goal standpoint, you might say, yeah, he might win a national championship. Right? And he might get us in a position to compete for it. That's obviously just one of the goals, right? You want kids to graduate. Yeah, there's all sorts of goals. So on that standpoint, you know, that's one of the goals that he might be all right with. But the other goals, I mean, the value standpoint, there's no way in which Urban Meyer matches up with what should values of Michigan State. And if Urban Meyer and, you know, coaching with integrity is another one. It's clear the University of Michigan does not value that, but Michigan State should. And so when you think about the values, you've got to have a values match, you have a goals match, and then you get into, all right, how are you going to do it? How are you going to recruit talent? How are you going to develop talent? How are you going to implement those skills on game day? And then your different buckets of competency there, and then are you good at handling donors and raising money and all of this other stuff that college football has to do. There's a lot of stuff, DB, right, on the plate, but you got to start with goals and values.
Right. Right.
And
yep.
Yeah. So
Urban Meyer, you know, to me, Urban Meyer is old shoes. You know, he's old shoes that you get at a thrift store. His time ended. And, you know, now, the rumors are circulating about Urban Meyer and Michigan State having interest. I don't buy any of it either way. It could be that Urban Meyer's agent is putting that out there because Urban Meyer might be interested in some job, but it might not be the MSU job.
Yeah, I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see Urban Meyer using Michigan State as leverage. To me, that makes a lot of sense. Urban Meyer using Michigan State leverage, but I honestly hope so, because a Michigan State football team coached by Urban Meyer would just, there's no other way to put it. It would be hard to root for.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see that either way. It's not a fit. There's plenty of other jobs, you know, and there's one that comes to mind in particular right now. Clemson is starting to feel like Dabo Swinney is going to be run out of town. And so that is a place and a conference where I could see Urban Meyer going very quickly because, you know, let's face it, Florida State.
There are no values.
What you got? Yeah, there's no values. It's the Southeast. And right, and the ACC isn't exactly, you know, the most stacked football conference ever, and is not going to be, just adding, you know, Stanford and Cal. And so that's a good fit for Urban Meyer, and he could be leveraging that somehow, maybe, although, you know, with his health issues, it might be wise for him to just not. I mean, but I don't care about Urban Meyer. You know, I care about MSU, and hopefully – the right decision is made, and there's a number of choices out there that could be good decisions.
Agreed.
Yes.
First of all, Jahmyr Gibbs on a touchdown run, which is great for my fantasy team. also good for Detroit Lions fans. But
yes.
Even better, he did like a Lambo leap in four field. Let me tell you what, the way he did that was incredibly difficult. That is a high wall that man climbed to join the fans.
Yes.
I mean, the Lambo leaps and the Lambo leap stuff, those are tiny walls. It's easy to get up with the fans there. This man, without any help, climbed up the wall like Spider-Man and got into the stands.
Right. I think they practiced those leaps.
I don't know. I don't know, but I kind of want to see him in a Spider-Man outfit tomorrow on Halloween.
Oh my goodness!
He got a nice running leap. I mean, he got up into the stands by himself, and look at him celebrating
right. With
the fans. Good for him.
Right. And the Lambo leap, I believe, is a grandfathered in thing that everybody's allowed to do still.
Yeah. So I gotta admit, I love touchdown celebrations. The more elaborate, the better. You want to do props, do props. I mean, it's hard to score.
Yeah.
Go for it. But this thing about, I mean, you're right. There are a lot of candidates. You would think there would be a way to find the values, goals, and then skill set match, right? You would think. And I think that's what you want to do. I also think, and this is just me, I think the people that say, oh, it's got to be, you know, it's got to be someone that's been a previous head coach, I think that's ridiculous.
It
just is. I mean, you've got lots of successful programs that were run by first-time coaches. So that's, you know, the people that were promoted from coordinator to head coach. So I don't think that has to be it. And I actually think the insistence of having a coach with previous head coaching experiences caused Michigan State to make some bad hires over the years. And so I think that's part of it. And I also think it's fine to hire a 35-year-old person to do it.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
A lot of the best coaches in the NFL are the youngest ones out in the field. I mean, are you telling me you wouldn't have hired Mike McDaniel because he was too young and he'd never been a head coach? I mean, the Miami head coach, or, you know, you wouldn't have hired Sean McVay? I mean, that's just as dumb as it gets.
Right, exactly. Yep. I mean, you know, we don't need to go through the names, but I think that, you know, if they have that vision, and what you said earlier in the season, Satchmo, too, that they have an idea of the type of program they're going to build and the type of players that they want. And, you know, and that it's going to be a reputable and, you know, place of growth and learning and, you know, a good place, not a moral, you know, cesspool.
Yep, you start with values and goals, make sure there's alignment in values and goals, and then you go move on to the next subject, which is talent acquisition, both at staff level and coaching level and at the athlete level. Talent acquisition, what's your plan on both of those? Does that plan fit modern football? Does that plan fit for the transfer portal and NIL? And does that plan fit schematically with modern schemes and all of that sort of stuff? And can you assemble the staff and bring in good people? What is your plan on that front? Then you go from talent acquisition on both the staff and player level to development on both the staff and the player level. How do you develop the players and the coaches? Because presumably both the players and the coaches want to make it to the next level. And so how do you do that? And then from there, it's like, all right, how do you take the talent, take the development, how do you turn that into a successful plan on game day? Then how does that successful plan translate to execution? Right? This is what you want to see.
Right.
And then, so, I mean, this is what you're looking at. It's, in a way, it seems like really easy. Like everyone just looks at records and all of this sort of stuff. It's actually really tricky. One of the interesting things, you know, I know Tom Izzo was on the search committee that hired Mark D'Antonio. And apparently Izzo knew after like just talking to an hour from D'Antonio, oh, D'Antonio was the one. Because Izzo gets this process. He understands what it is from a coaching standpoint.
All right.
And, yeah, he could tell. So this is how you conduct a search. The good news is we haven't heard any leaks on the search outside of everyone thinking Urban Meyer's, eating at LS.
Honestly, if that throws everybody off, then let the Urban Meyer rumor mill churn as long as it's not real.
Yes, as long as it's not real. That's the caveat.
Yeah. Yes.
Could you imagine just walking into like LS and seeing our Urban Meyer and Alan Hall just sitting and having a margarita?
Oh, God. I might be tempted to take the margarita and throw it at Urban's face.
Oh.
And then look
so
at Holler
funny.
And say, why don't you just bring back Mel Tucker while you're at it?
Yeah, it would be so funny. Like, drop off like a napkin, and on the napkin just have the numbers that says, hey, Papa John's is down the street. Here's the phone number.
And on the other side, right, please don't do this. Oh. Yeah. I mean, when you look, just another thing you were saying about coaches, you know, and people want this experience and these records. Honestly, when you look at coaches now, when you look around, most of them are newer or new-ish. There's only a few guys that have kind of hopped around, you know, like Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley, you know, Chip, what's his name? With UCLA has kind of bounced a little
Chip
bit
Kelly,
around. But he
yeah.
came out, yeah, Kelly, he's been out of the NFL. But, you know, there isn't really, other than Saban, that guy that has all those records and all that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you gotta start fresh and new somewhere because those guys aren't growing on trees anymore. They're actually, you know, Saban's getting older. Alabama's his last stop. And you don't have... You know, and quite frankly, I don't want any of these older guys. I don't want Brian Kelly. I don't want Urban Meyer. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's time to grow,
yeah.
advance, move on, look to the future.
Well, yes. Well, just look at it. It's time for a new generation. Let's get some new blood infuse some energy into it. And look, if you end up with Lance Leopold, that's fine. We're not saying you don't hire Lance Leopold. He seems like the Kansas coach seems like a decent guy that can coach and would be a good fit at Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's who you settle on, that's fine. And know that he's going to be around for 5 to 10 years and you're on to the next coach. That's okay if that's your end result. We're not saying that you automatically rule someone out. But I'll tell you what, I would lean young. And if you want to look for proof of success, you don't have to go much further than Tom Izzo.
Right.
I mean, you took a chance on a young assistant, and let me tell you what, Michigan State did not want to hire him.
Nope.
Judd threatened to quit if they didn't hire him. And that's the reason Tom got the job.
Yep. There's a lot of young candidates, right? And two come to mind, Brian Hartline, the Buckeyes offensive coordinator, Charles Huff. The Marshall coach, who I think is not much over 40. I mean, those would be great hires.
Yeah. They would be terrific hires. So anyway, it's something to think about.
Yeah.
It is. It's worth it. And the other thing to do is it's okay to think non-traditional too, right? Just think how different life would be if Michigan State had actually managed to hire Marvin Lewis. Marvin Lewis turned into a great NFL coach.
Yes.
And Michigan State made a serious push. They almost landed him. Right? This is a case where I think Marvin Lewis would have been a terrific Michigan State football coach. And
yeah.
Michigan State would have been, and I think this was the John L. year, the year they hired John L. You know, if we'd ended up with Marvin Lewis instead, it would have been fantastic. And so there's room for all sorts of types of people from all sorts of different backgrounds to come in. And so, yeah, if you can get an NFL coordinator that's got, you know, the brains and the talent of a Marvin Lewis that, you know, says, hey, you want to know what? I'll come to Michigan State and ply my trade there. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I think that's something that we should be open to as well.
Right. I mean, I threw Eric Bieniemy at you the other day, and I said Washington is just spinning in circles. I mean, no one in the NFL will hire him, but gosh, he could have a head coaching job right there in East Lansing.
I'll tell you what, the number of people that will come to play for Eric Bieniemy because of his NFL connections is insane. Is insane. 100% people would do it.
Yep. I would be overjoyed, too, with a hire like that. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, the Michigan State offense could take a lesson from the way Ben Johnson is calling the plays right now for the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions have decided that the best play in their playbook right now, the ball in the hands of Jahmyr Gibbs, which, once again, thank you very much, as he's on my fantasy team. I appreciate that. And so Gibbs is out of the game now. So what they've done is they've decided to either hand the ball off to him or throw it to him on every play. Well, Michigan State's best player happens to be a running back in Carter. You do this. You either hand it to him or you throw it to him. And you put it in the hands of your best player, and you see what happens.
Yep.
And so, yes, there you go.
Yeah, it's not rocket science. Sometimes you just have to kind of roll with something that works. I mean, case in point, too, yesterday I was watching the end of the Denver Broncos game. They beat Kansas City. They did something old-fashioned. They just kept running the football.
I know. Shocking, isn't it?
I know. They found something that worked. Russell Wilson, you know, and the receivers, not what they once were. It was also cold and windy, but they just ran it down Kansas City's throat, and Kansas City's got a pretty good defense. And sometimes you just go with what you know instead of trying all these things, trying to take a team and make them look like the Lions offense when they don't have those people, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, yeah. So, hey, I mean, I'll just throw it out there right now. Why not make a run of Ben Johnson? I'm not saying Ben Johnson wants to coach Michigan State, all right? The fact of the matter is Ben Johnson could probably get his pick of NFL coaches, but you NFL jobs. But you want to know what? You never know until you pick up the phone and call him.
Right.
This is the hottest name in NFL coaching circles. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you at least say, hey, Ben, you like MSU Dairy? Come on, let's go have an ice cream.
You have to make the call. The worst that he's going to say is no thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, but this is how you recruit high-level talent. You don't box yourself in, and then you've got a process, and the process should be values, goals, and then your different buckets of planning and execution.
That's right.
And you go from there. All right. Do we really want to talk about anything else, Michigan State football?
No, I think at this point we're simply just waiting for the new coach, and you know, that's going to be at the end of the season. I guess the only thing I'm going to say about MSU football, really nothing to do with their performance anymore this season, is please, Big Ten, no more Spartans giving up home games for Penn State or whatever at the end of the season. I hope this is a one-time thing. No offense to Ford Field, but I just don't like it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't want to see that again.
Yeah, there's basically
– yeah.
And this is more a reflection of Michigan State's record than anything else. There's what, going to be 50,000 Penn State fans in that stadium and 10,000 Michigan State fans?
Yes. That is, unless Penn State loses to Maryland this weekend, then Penn State's balloon will really have burst. And then
yeah,
it'll be sort of a choppy Penn State crowd.
Okay. Agreed. Okay. Basically what Penn State fans will be doing is they'll be going on the secondary market to see who else they can sell their tickets to. The StubHub will be very active. All right. Before we get to Michigan State football, let's stay in college football here and talk about Michigan. Not because we like to talk about Michigan, but there's something interesting going on here.
Yes, there is, in case you haven't heard.
In case you haven't heard. Apparently, remember when Jim Harbaugh called the rest of the cheaters from the South and, you know, declared the rest of college football is cheating?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it turns out Michigan sort of embraced the cheating. Apparently the phrase "cheaters never prosper" never entered the Harbaugh household. And so the University of Michigan has been engaged in what many people have called one of the most elaborate scouting systems they've ever seen. The problem is scouting in college football is banned by the rules. When I say scouting, you can't send people to take things in person. The way college football is, you get whatever you get off of TV, and then the teams usually exchange game tapes with each other, and that's the limit, and that's what scouting is. Now, every team, and Michigan in particular, was scouting to steal signals. Right. And so they figure if they know, and apparently stealing signals is like this rampant thing that happens all the time in college football. It just is. It happens all the time, and, you know, everyone has someone on staff that's trying to steal signals. What makes the University of Michigan's signal stealing is that, apparently they're the only ones stupid enough to get caught, which is remarkable. And there seems to be general conclusions like, yeah, everyone's doing it, but if you're stupid enough to get caught, you really do deserve to get punished for it. So that's the first part. And B, Michigan offering up this, everyone is doing it. Well, no, not everyone is doing it. The sort of everyone rushing to the defense of the University of Michigan is like saying, it's incumbent on the other team to keep, not to get your signal stolen. And it's like, well, no, it is incumbent on the other team not to get your signal stolen. It's also incumbent on everyone to act within, some sort of bounded rules. And if you know what the rules are, you act within them. And so there's that. And then the last thing that I found really interesting, because, got people buying tickets on StubHub and, or going to different games and filming stuff on camera, phone cameras, and all this sort of stuff. The thing I found interesting, apparently TCU knew about this because it's an open secret, and TCU knew about it. So they put in like whole new calls in the whole new system. And because they had time between the bowl games, right? It's really hard for a college football team to switch their signals week to week. But TCU had all that time to put in a new system. And Michigan came out to play, and they spanked them. And, and because I'm guessing Michigan didn't know what play was coming out. And so it turns out in college football that there are two types of coaches, right? So coaches that are really good when they know what plays are being called and that in advance, and then the types of coaches that are just really good and they're going to win no matter what. And it seems like Michigan's been hiring the types of coaches that are just really good when they know what the other team is calling.
Right, exactly. Not to mention that their defiance of, you know, even acknowledging this Connor Stallions guy, who, by the way, more and more every time I see like sideline photos of Michigan games, still photos. I saw one today where Stallions was walking right in front of Jim Harbaugh. How do you not know who this guy is? How do you not know, you know, he's huddling with the coaches, not Harbaugh necessarily, but he's huddling with the assistants during the game with pieces of paper and,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. And apparently if you stand on the film, he's always standing next to one of the coordinators with, like, his legal pad or, like, 11 by 17 paper, like, consulting it to figure out which play is being called and all this sort of stuff. I mean, come on now. You're telling me, like, coaches tell players, you got to pay attention to detail. Every detail matters. You got to pay attention to this. You tell me they don't know who's on staff and what they're doing. Come on now.
Right. Right. They know. Yeah.
They know.
And, you know, what, I mean, the reaction from their fans is predictably, you know, that same Michigan stuff. Well, everybody else does it. You know, it's the first one, right? Somebody's out to get us. They did our kids wrong, right? And then the other one that's hilarious is, you know, somebody said, well, we better give a Jimmy Hoffa ride to whoever's leaking. You know.
By the way, your impression of Michigan fans is golden. It's fantastic.
Well, I grew up around it very sadly, so I was subjected to it for my part of my life.
We need to bottle that up and get you to a stand-up comic night, like an open mic night in East Lansing. I'll just let you go to town because it's just great.
Hey, everybody, I'm Michigan fan. This is a travesty to our kids today.
Oh my goodness
gracious, Michigan. Yeah, so out of
Michigan.
The open, so much cheating. The question is, Sadler, what, if anything, comes of this? And does it even happen this year?
And it's not, nothing's going to come of it this year. So if anything comes, they'll go to the college football playoffs if they beat Ohio State. And if they don't, Ohio State will go. It's pretty straightforward, but nothing's going to come up this year. That's not the way the NCAA rolls. Come on now. I mean, it's, you know, the NCAA, when they have the help of the FBI, it still takes them 5 years to figure something out.
And by the way, for the record, because people are getting confused, even Michigan fans, this whole thing with the FBI has nothing to do with, this is a whole nother thing going on.
Oh, a whole other thing, yes. Yeah, it's something about one of their, one of their staffers or assistant coaches not having access to something illegally on the computer. I have no idea what that's about. But it just speaks to the depth of the cesspool that is Ann Arbor and Michigan football.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that seems really serious. Like, you don't see the FBI. They're not messing around with this stealing signs. But this thing, the FBI gets involved. I don't know what that is, but that doesn't seem good at all.
No, it doesn't seem good at all. So just a quick update from the football game. Apparently, the Las Vegas Raiders have been watching Michigan State special teams and didn't realize that the ball is alive on the kickoff.
Yeah.
And then it looks like Dorsey for Detroit has been injured. And it does not look like a good injury.
Number three on the Raiders would have been wise to just get away from that, let it go. It probably was going to roll into the end zone.
Yeah. But Khalil Dorsey is the injured line on this play. And it, like I said, doesn't look good.
Not at all.
Hopefully that works out in some way, shape, or form. Oh, yeah. He is limping off under his own power, it looks like. Good for him. But, apparently the Raiders are yet another team watching Michigan State play. Apparently, like the Raiders and the Lions both had nothing better to do. And it's just like, oh, maybe we should try playing like that.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like, hey, guys, the MSU game's on. Maybe we can pick up a few things. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's see what we
okay. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So, anyway, on the Michigan thing, one more question.
What did you think of Deion Sanders' comments about it? Did you hear what he said?
I think he said Deion comes from an NFL background, right? Which is, you know, scouting, it's part of the game, all of that sort of stuff. I mean, I get the response, right, which is, hey, you know, this is all gamesmanship and it's part of the game and all of this sort of stuff. The bottom line is that, hey, this was a fairly elaborate scheme, more elaborate than what is normally put out there. And, yeah, you can't – I've got a feeling as – that's it's just you can't do that. You can't do that. And so I get where Deion's coming from. He's coming from a pro background, and for him, it's not that big a deal. But
yeah. He was comparing it to baseball too, in the sense that, you know, when you know the sign in baseball, it's more of a — it's actually a bigger thing in a way, because, and this is what Deion was saying, that you know the sign, you know the pitch coming to you or whatever, your defense can be ready for whatever. And I get that. He played baseball, so he has that credibility. He said, you know, you still got to stop, you know, whatever's coming at you. And while that's true, there's still rules, and, you know, most of the coaches are – I think the majority of them are extremely ticked off at Michigan. I mean, Michigan has become, if they weren't already, they are now the national enemy.
Yes. Well, the rest of the country is coming to understand what Michigan State fans already know. Michigan is the enemy. And let's just face it, it is a lot easier to stop something when you know what's coming at you.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Right.
Right. If what was coming at you didn't matter, you wouldn't scout.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, come on now.
Yeah. No, it's just once again is the arrogance of, you know, even beyond just Michigan itself. Jim Harbaugh is just.
Yeah.
You know, he's like the guy that drives by the NCAA office, you know, every week and just flips them the bird. And sooner or later, he's made too many enemies. I mean, they're really going after Michigan, you know, because of this whole Burgergate thing, you know, that he wouldn't admit to, you know.
Yeah.
So, hey, glad it's not MSU.
Yeah, glad it's not MSU. The other interesting aspect of this is the NFL coming out and saying, well, any penalty he had in college might transfer to the pros. I'm like, really? That's just dumb. That's just stupid.
There was precedent to that. Did you read further into that?
Yeah, I did. So you had the Tressel thing.
Yeah.
And so that transferred. But then you have Pete Carroll that just left USC high and dry, facing sanctions and NCAA penalties, and he didn't get penalized. And what's the difference? People like Pete Carroll and people don't like Jim Tressel. That's the difference.
Right. And Jim Tressel was a coordinator for the Colts, and Carroll was going to be a head coach.
So come on.
No one would stop. Jim Harbaugh, there would have to be something far more serious than that for Jim Harbaugh to not get a NFL.
Yeah, look, if the Bears want to coach Harbaugh, hire Harbaugh, just let him. that's where it comes down to. I mean, just let him.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
I mean, it'll take him 8 years to turn the Bears around, and by that time he'll be fired anyway.
Yeah, that is an organization in quicksand, no doubt about that.
Yeah, isn't that how long it took Harbaugh to turn Michigan around? 8 years? Am I missing something?
Roughly.
What, 7 years?
Yeah, well,
roughly.
And then now that's in quotations because, you know, or whatever, because, you know, yeah, he turned him around, but this is like steroid use, basically. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Anything Michigan has done now for the past 3 years, and if they're standing on the podium January 9th or whatever, you know, that's going to be with an asterisk with all this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there you have it. You know, that's your college football talk for the day. Let's switch to basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting. So I find it interesting the way Tom Izzo is preparing his team for the basketball season now, as opposed to the way he did it 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the changes that's been made is that he has he's done this the last 2 years, is he's had like a week's worth of practice against Tennessee. They get in a week's worth of practice and they scrimmage, and he feels like he gets a lot more out of those close practices and scrimmages than he does out of just playing against each other. And he feels like it really sets him up. And I think he did this with Gonzaga too. So he's been experimenting with a new way to prepare his team for the season. And I love it. To me, this is a thing that makes a lot of sense, and I really hope he continues to do it. Mm-hmm. One of the byproducts of this, and you're actually seeing this in the NFL, DB, where in training camp, I think the Lions did it this year. They did joint practices and scrimmages against another team. I think it's just a smart
mm-hmm.
way to prepare, and it's infiltrating all levels. So kudos to Tom
mm-hmm.
Izzo. When you talk about like modern techniques and stuff, the stuff that we're supposed to be seeing out of NFL coaches, this is Tom
mm-hmm.
Izzo adapting and growing with the times and doing that, which is what you want to
mm-hmm.
your head coach to do. So in this, he and, you know, Rick Barnes decided that they were going to do their last practice. Instead of doing a practice, they do an exhibition game, and they open it up. So people could come to the game, and, you know, the proceeds of the game would go to help victims of the wildfires in Hawaii. They got ESPN to televise the game and help raise money for the victims of the wildfire in Hawaii. And so really good stuff. This is the sort of leadership you want out of your athletic department, out of your basketball program. But I like the way this was done. They were able to take something that was naturally happening and turn it into something, a force for good, DB.
It was a great idea.
Great idea. But I'll tell you what, the execution of the game was terrific. When I say the execution of the game, the execution of the game broadcast was terrific. Because they mic'd up Izzo. They had a couple of conversations with him. They mic'd up Barnes, and they had a couple of conversations with him. And then they mic'd up both of them together, and they had the two of them talking to each other and answering questions together in the middle of the game. But let me tell you what, it was fascinating. I got more candid insight from both teams listening to the coaches talk to each other and laugh and watch the game and all this sort of stuff than I have in a long time. Holy
mm-hmm.
cow, DB, if college basketball coverage was always like this, it would be fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about that. Yep.
It also helps that Michigan State's got a good basketball team. A team that looks like it's capable of winning.
Yeah, I mean, that was a Final Four team that they played, and they, of course, could be a Final Four team. I mean, Tennessee I think they bowed out in the Elite Eight last year or somewhere.
Yeah,
these
are two teams that can reach the Final Four.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great opponent to scrimmage with. And, hey, you know, you got a you got a taste of a bugaboo called the turnovers there. They were down 17-1. But what a furious comeback. And what I loved even more was the energy in the Breslin Center. I mean, it was fantastic for an exhibition game.
It was fantastic. What also cracked me up is the degree to which both coaches worked over the refs. I was like, dude, this is an exhibition game. Save some of this.
Yeah.
And not only the degree to which they worked over the refs, but in their interviews with ESPN, they were complaining about the refs to each other.
Coaches do have a common bond in some ways, and officiating would be one of them.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. Quick impressions from the game. Tyson Walker, still good. The Michigan State is deep, and they're going to play fast this year. They're going to get out and transition a lot. It looks like they're going to full court press, which listeners to this podcast know that I've been begging for the better part of 10 years now.
Yes, you have.
There's a lot there. This is going to be a fun season. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And much needed, too, with all the pain of just everything that's been going on in MSU, you know, beyond just, you know, the losses on the field with football, but just, you know, the terrible things that happened. Hopefully, you know, we can really start to move forward with this.
Yeah, I think one of these days, DB, you and I are going to have to do a podcast devoted to just the stupid stuff that's been happening at Michigan State. Board of trustees, presidents getting fired or resigning, stepping down. This can't be normal. We're going to have a discussion about that. So that'll be a separate pile. As exciting, you know, Michigan State basketball, we're all excited about that. Michigan State hockey, DB. We thought we were excited about them, and then they went to Boston, and they got their hats handed to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Their hats. I like that. That's a good PG-rated way to say it. As you pointed out when we were in person the other day, it shows while there is some improvement with Michigan State hockey in the first month of action, there's still a long way to go.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
but the fact that we're ranked
still some
in the season is at least one step. It doesn't mean anything. And what I've noticed about hockey that's actually kind of fun, the college hockey too, especially right now, is especially early in the year, a lot of upsets can happen in October, November. I was watching the end of the Wisconsin-Minnesota game the other night. I don't think Wisconsin was ranked very high at all. Minnesota is one of the top in the country. And I think Wisconsin went in there and swept them in Minnesota's arena, and that's pretty unusual lately that anybody's able to do that. And so Wisconsin bolted right up the rankings into the top 10. So you're seeing these little things happen right now that, it does make the sport fun in that way. And hopefully I'll be interested to see more about Michigan State hockey to see what they can do, you know.
Yeah, I am excited to watch, right? I'm excited
mm-hmm.
to watch.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see them play. I think this is an interesting football team. Not football team, hockey team. I think it's an interesting hockey team. I think they have interesting parts. I think there is some talent there. This team is also substantially different than the team, and so I think it is going to take a while for the parts to gel and for the bonding to happen and for chemistry to be built and all of that sort of stuff. When you think of it in that standpoint, there's something there, right? It is going to take a while. I'm hopeful that this is going to be the first Michigan State hockey team in many years to have a better second half of the season than first half of the season.
Yeah, that was a big bugaboo with Dan Cole. We'd get all excited, and then all of a sudden, literally the last 2 years, barely a win after Christmas.
Yeah. And so to me, that's going to be the interesting test. All right, where are they at Christmas time? And then do they improve after Christmas time? Or do they at least play 500 hockey after Christmas time? Which would be a step forward.
Exactly.
And this also goes back to, we were talking about what we want to see out of Michigan State football, which is improvement, right? You want to see improvement at all of this sort of stuff. With Michigan State hockey, yeah, I want to see improvement as the season goes along, 100%. But what I also want to see is I want to see what is Michigan State's hockey identity, right? See, with Michigan State football, we're not even asking to see their identity because at this point their identity is irrelevant. But what is their hockey identity? What type of style of hockey do they want to play? And how do they execute that style? To me, these are really interesting questions that I want to see. And I don't think we've been able to answer those questions about Michigan State hockey yet because the talent gap between them and their opponents has been so vast that they're just fighting to hang on, fighting for dear life. Now that maybe the talent differential is closed, you can start to see how Michigan State wants to play. I don't know what that is, but I'm looking forward to seeing it happen.
Yeah, I agree. Yes. The positive side of this, and hopefully it continues, is, we're seeing that Adam Nightingale, has a vision and a plan for this team, and maybe it's starting to come together, and it's kind of connected to the modern times of hockey. Not something from a long time ago. And so, that's a blueprint maybe for the football team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. All right. I think that's a good place to leave it. By the way, Michigan State volleyball, the women beat Penn State. Big win for them, so well done.
Oh, nice.
I think the men's – I think the women's soccer team won the Big Ten. I think the men's soccer team's in first place, so I think I've got that right. Michigan State showing signs of building outside of football, basketball, hockey, and baseball. And that's a big deal. This is something I always wanted to see out of Michigan State, and it's finally coming to fruition. I think you got to give Alan Haller a lot of credit for that because he's made that a priority.
Yeah, no, that's important. We talked about that a lot, especially earlier in the season. We were talking about that Nebraska volleyball match, that attracted a 90,000 plus, and we were like, well, why not us? Well, we could do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then Iowa hosted a women's basketball game that 55,000 people show up. It's pretty cool.
That's right. Yep. If Iowa can, why can't we? I don't see a reason.
Yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. All right. Tomorrow's Halloween, or maybe it's Halloween when you're listening, or maybe you're in a candy coma when you hear this. I just don't know. In the podcasting universe, anything is possible. So let's talk a little Halloween. Your favorite Halloween candy, DB?
Well, there are so many. But one of my all-time favorites that I've enjoyed getting in my, Halloween bucket is the Mini Almond Joys.
Oh, yes, the Mini Almond Joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you?
So, this is weird. I like Crackle. And one of the reasons why I like Crackle, just beyond the fact that it tastes freaking good, is that you don't get Crackle year-round. You pretty much only get Crackle around Halloween time.
Right.
And so I love me some Crackle. It's a Hershey's product, and you know, I'm down with Made in America. I'm down with Hershey, Pennsylvania, also mm-hmm. home of the Hershey Bears. Just throwing that one out there for the hockey fans that are listening. You know, I've been to the theme park, but Crackle, I really like it. It's crunchy. It's chocolatey. And it's only, it's kind of like Nestle, but better. It's only available around Halloween time. And even around Halloween time, you got to get in those like special mixed bags. Like Hershey puts those mixed bags of candy out. You can't just go buy a bag of Crackle. And then you get those mixed bags and there's only like a dozen Crackle in them. And the rest is like, you know, Hershey bars, and you got Hershey dark chocolate and regular Hershey bars and Mr. Good bars and that sort of stuff. And I'm always hunting for the Crackle. So yeah, give me some Crackle.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's weird that they don't ever have like Crackle bars available, you know, in the supermarket checkout lane.
Yeah. You just can't get them.
Yeah.
Favorite Halloween?
Real quick side question. Do you like candy corn?
Candy corn is evil. It's awful. It should be banned. I mean,
I love candy corn, Satchma.
Oh, you love candy corn.
I do, yeah.
Oh, man. What is it about candy corn that you love?
I don't know. I just like it. You know, I have such fond memories of getting little bags of candy corn in my Halloween pumpkin also. There's always constant debates about that at work, you know, on Teams. And most people say what you say, you know, that candy corn is evil and that I and the two other people that like it must be from another world or out of this planet. But, gosh, I just do like it.
Yeah, there's that. And then there's candy corn so easy to tamper with. Do you remember back when people were tampering with kids' Halloween candy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Scary.
Yeah, scary stuff.
Yeah.
Your favorite Halloween movie?
Oh, I was thinking about this earlier today. There's so many. But I have to say that I think one of my favorites is the Michael Myers series with Jamie Lee Curtis and the original one too from the late 70s, the Halloween movie.
Yeah, the Halloween
movie.
That's a good one. I'll have to go with Poltergeist.
Oh, that's a classic.
Yeah. I mean, I thought about going Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Also a classic, but Poltergeist has got a level of subtleness to it that and it's really spooky.
Yes, it is.
But I see the Halloween movies. Halloween movies are classic.
Yeah, and the Saw series also is quite devious. There's another sort of less acclaimed one that I watched a few years ago called Ma, with what is her name? Not Viola Davis. Yeah, Viola Davis, I believe, played Ma, and it was evil.
Yeah, I could see that. And so, does The Shining count as a Halloween movie?
Sure it does.
Yeah, The Shining would be number two for me.
Oh yeah, that holds up. That still scares people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That one holds up really well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's people to this day that I know, including my mother, who don't like Jack Nicholson or are afraid of Jack Nicholson because of that movie.
Well, I could see that.
Yes.
He was freaky in the movie.
Oh yeah,
and it is. It's, I don't know what's scarier though: is Jack Nicholson's portrayal in the movie, or seeing a young Jack Nicholson?
Maybe a little of both.
Yeah, it could be a little of both.
Yeah. Yes. The your game update here, the Lions have defeated the Raiders 26-14.
Yes. And good for the Lions coming out and beating being the Raiders, a team they should beat. And so they did it successfully. And I think the Lions have advanced to the point where they're beating the teams that they should be. And they're, you know, they'll probably split against teams that are better, equal or better to them. And that'll end up with a winning record.
That's right.
And so, yeah, I think that's sort of where they're at.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's not bad at all. Well, I think it's a good place to end the broadcast on. What sort of candy will DB be giving away on Halloween?
Ah, well, that is a surprise because it's being kept from me because I tend to get into it before the treaters arrive. So I don't know. How about you?
So we'll be giving away Kit Kats. Kit Kat and I think Hershey bars. So Kit Kat and Hershey bars.
I imagine some crackles will be set
no,
aside
that
here.
Was there was there oh. was a, there was I could not find the bags that had the crackles in them.
Oh,
this was, it was a crushing blow. It's just like, I was tempted to go like from store to store hunting them down when I realized I just didn't have the time to do that.
Yeah. Oh, that hurts.
I know. It's a gut punch. Absolute gut punch.
Oh.
So, there you go. But Kit Kats are good.
Yeah,
I have a feeling absolutely. That whoever gets the Kit Kats will be pleased with their haul.
Yes, those are equally good. Yes.
Yes. All right. Well, I think on that note, it is time to say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.